History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that should not go untold. And they don't have to go untold, as long as we're willing to do something about it. Ask a few questions, do a little listening, and we're sure to hear something we've never heard before. Our goal is to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, not only are we educated, not only are we entertained, but so often we find ourselves inspired by these stories from our men and women in uniform. Our guest today is Tom DiGiorgio, a retired Air Force Lieutenant Colonel who did something I'm pretty sure most of you listening today never have, and did it in a plane many of you may not have heard of before. But before we get to that, we always like to start at the beginning. For Tom, that means his childhood as the eighth of 11 children.
Well, first of all, my parents came from Italy, and they came from the Abruzzi section. Although they didn't meet there, they met here in Philadelphia. And we think it was probably an arranged marriage because he was 10 years older. He had a job, and she had lost her father, who came across from Italy ahead of the family to San Francisco because he was a brick mason, and he helped with the earthquake they had there. But he never left there. He died there at age 40. So I grew up, yes, my father and my mother had 11 kids. And sometimes we wonder why. Well, my father was a farmer, and farmers always needed a lot of kids. But here he's a tailor in a city. But anyway, what was it like? Being number eight, I had a lot of privileges because my older brothers and sisters made sure we were well taken care of. See, unfortunately, I was the first one to finish high school. Well, the first boy, excuse me. One of my sisters also did. But later on, most of us got some education wherever they were. What was it like? Well, you didn't lack for companionship because as far as playing as a young teenager, because on the street I lived in, there were 54 houses. And the average family had about five or six kids. Now, we, of course, had 11. So at any playing day in the summertime, you could count at least 70 kids playing games, all kinds of stickball, dodgeball, baseball, football. We never actually had a real football, but we would find something to make it look like that. So again, I'd say that I was probably privileged to be near the bottom of the brood, as I would call it.
I've interviewed a lot of veterans with Italian-American heritage, and invariably the conversation turns to Sunday dinner or whatever Mom used to make that they still salivate over. Do you have some memories like that?
Yes, I can still picture our Sunday dinners. It might make you a little hungry when I tell you that the pure Italian dinner would be some form of pasta, but the meats were delicious. One is called braciole, and that's, in our case, a piece of flank steak. Now, that brings up a little story. When I was like 12 years old, I would be sent to the butcher shop. And I can remember just barely looking over the block that they used to cut the meat. And on the wall, there was hooks, and there was a quarter of an animal up there. And I would come with $1. And I would say, my mother said, give me a dollar's worth of flank steak cut thin. Well, he would go over to that quarter and slice a piece off, go on this big block, smash it down, cut through it. And he'd hold it up. It was so thin, you could see through it. And I'm looking over the block at all this, and he wraps it up, puts it in a wax paper, he puts it in a bag, takes my dollar, and that's it. And so for that dollar, we were feeding 11 kids with the meat because my mother would take it and fill it up with all kinds of goodies. And people say, what are goodies? Well, bacon, some kind of cheese, always a cheese, you know, Italians, and raisins and maybe some other stuff. I don't remember. Roll it up, saute it in a frying pan, tie it up with string, drop it into a big vat of gravy, which is, some people would say that was not the, what we call gravy
sauce.
Yeah. And it's red. And the smell in the house was so good that, you know, you just can't wait till that's finished. And most of us would take the bread and dip it in the gravy until the meat came out. But that's the way. So the Sunday dinner had that, meatballs, ravioli, which is my favorite. And, of course, a salad. Now, in Italians, they eat the salad second. I don't know why, but that's the way it worked in our house. But I do now remember that later on in life, when I was working as a 21-year-old, I brought a fellow home with me who used to live in upstate Pennsylvania, in Bloomsburg, and he was not Italian. And so it was Thanksgiving, and my mother said that, why don't we have turkey, which we never did before. But she didn't have the turkey until we were finished all the Italian food. So that's one of the stories I can tell you about food.
In the home, you guys were speaking Italian?
Here's how it worked. The little kids were on one side of the table, and then the adults on the other side. Now, there's a spread of about 19 years between us. So the adults would talk amongst themselves civilly. Now, the kids, you can imagine, from 3 to whatever we were, got pretty loud. So my father is on my right side on the end, and my mother on the left. They're speaking in Italian. Well, obviously, we're speaking in English. And when it got too loud, my father had a broom next to him, and he would come over and bop you on the head. The word for broom is scuba. Uh-huh. And he would say, "Sta zitta." That means shut up. And that's the first time you'll get a bop on the head, and you'll look up, and Wayo means young boy or little boy. And he would call me, "Hey, Wayo, sta zitta." So as far as the language is what you asked about, the younger ones never learned the language very well. The older ones did. The first 3 could speak all the time like that. I feel very disappointed myself for not following up on it. And he did die when I was 16, when I learned Spanish, which is pretty close in some cases, you know, but never learned the language. And that's why I'm trying to pick it up now.
There's something else I want to ask you about that has nothing to do with your own military service, but since you were alive then, it seems like everyone I've talked to who was alive on December 7th, 1941, has some kind of memory about that day and how this world-changing news made its way to your ears. Do you have a memory about Pearl Harbor?
I think Pearl Harbor was attacked, I believe, on a Sunday. We were actually in church, and so we didn't know until we came back. And we didn't understand it, really. Now, I was born in 34, so that would make me approximately six or seven years old. So my memory isn't too clear of the ramifications or what was going to happen. But I do know that there was a lot of talk. The neighbors came around, and we all talked about it. The adults all talked about it. That's all I can tell you. So I don't know, have too much more memory about that. But I do, I'm writing memoirs of my life. And my first page, the first line says, I'm 9 years old, it's 1943, and my elder sister, Marion, comes out to the door. We're sitting on the step, me and my friends. Mm-hmm. And the first thing she says is, "Did you hear that Italy surrendered?" Now, my memoir says, I wasn't sure of what that meant, but we were the enemy, let's face it. Italians were the enemy. And therefore, that meant something to the adults. And we did live in a neighborhood with mixed nationalities. So from that point on, I did start to follow the war. And I remember the newspapers having a map every day showing the line where our line was against the Axis. And so now I got involved in it more and more. So all I can tell you for sure is VE Day, which was the victory in Europe, was a big celebration. Now, that was 1945, so I was approximately 11 years old. And we had some of the best parties in the streets that you can imagine. And that's how my memory says, this is great. And, of course, when VE Day came in Japan, the party was even bigger. You know, everybody had a little stand with food outside, blaring music. I don't know whether it was loudspeakers or what. I can remember the song from Temptation, the jazzy part of it. So those things are stuck in my mind because one of the churches had a schoolyard that all the people could come in and enjoy themselves. And being that age, that's where I went. But as far as Pearl Harbor, I don't have too much of a significant memory on that.
But you also had 2 of your older brothers that were in World War II?
That's correct. And so after the VE Day, the brother in Europe got leave. And the leave was what happened, what they're sending him to the Philippines to fight the Pacific War. Another brother was just in training at Fort Lewis in near Seattle, Washington. So he never got overseas. And my elder sister, who was in front of, you know, oldest of all of us, decided, let's get a picture taken because everybody's here. So she gathered all 11 of us in twos and threes. We walked to the studio because nobody had a car. My parents never had a car. And we walked about three blocks to the studio. We have a great shot. It's in black and white with a little touch-up. But everybody's looking at the camera when that flash went off. And that's something we cherish. And my older brother made several copies and sent it to our family. So everybody has a picture of the 13 of us, you know, having a picture taken.
Did you ever get a sense of what your older brother had done in Europe during the war?
Yes, I looked it up. Well, first of all, he told me he was a mortar man. Now, I didn't know what that meant then, but that's when you see pictures of the war where they stick this little projectile into the front of the sleeve, I guess, and it fires. That's all I know, but he was definitely infantry. And I looked up by taking a picture of his patch that his company was about 2 months after D-Day. So when they got to Germany, and he apparently missed the Battle of the Bulge because he never mentioned that. When he got to Germany, the war ended. And his, I don't know the army terms, but his platoon had to take care of prisoners. And from what I read, there was 100,000 prisoners to be taken care of, which in itself is quite a feat. How do you feed 100 prisoners that you just shot at? And so that was his job. And then the war ended, so they sent him back to the States. And then he, from the picture taken that we did, he had about 10 more days, and they sent him to the Philippines. He told me himself, I said, what'd you do there? Well, what does every soldier know when they're there? They're waiting for the invasion of Japan. And he said, all he can tell me was about guard duty. So everybody had a job to do while they're waiting. The other brother never got to the Philippines. Now, why, I don't know. Obviously, he did not have to get involved in an invasion of Japan. So he was soon let go and come back.
Meanwhile, Tom's military service would come in the air during some of the tensest periods of the Cold War, as well as the early days in Vietnam. We'll hear about the unique assignment the Air Force had for him when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.